Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everybody to ScaryCast, the most fun hour plus of paranormal entertainment on the web. Glad to have everyone here. We got all of our co-hosts tonight, and we got a great crowd of listeners and a great guest. And before we get started, I was requested to tell my joke. I have a joke that, it was a meme, and I saw it on Facebook, but I loved it, and I posted it in honor of Dr. Trey Donaway, who is here with us. I'm going to be introducing him in a second. And so it goes like this. Well, the surface of the Earth is about 70% water. Of that 70%, none of it is carbonated. Therefore, the Earth is flat.
makes sense to me, John. Can't argue with that logic.
It makes complete sense to me. There you go. Jay, thank you for asking me to rewind that joke. I think it's one of
Yes, it was an excellent joke. Excellent joke.
That got about 200 views on Facebook. So that's great. But anyway, thanks a lot. And, of course, we start off with the queen of ScaryCast, the one and only Robin Haynes Lecrae. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am good. Glad to be here as always. Excited about tonight.
Well, we're glad to have you here. And the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, without whom we would all probably be sick and dying, but he keeps us alive and going with his great stories. Dr. Trey Donaway, how are you doing tonight, Trey?
I'm doing great, John. I spent the weekend doing Revolutionary War stuff with Constitution Day. Did you know that Constitution Day, the U.S. Constitution Day, was last Saturday? That's the anniversary of when the Constitution was signed.
Happy anniversary, Constitution.
And I've got a question for you. Do you know where the Constitution was signed?
Philadelphia, right?
No idea.
At the bottom. At the bottom of the paper.
You guys and your jokes tonight. Like, nobody ever jokes.
That's about as good as my flatter joke.
Yes, and actually, John, you're right. It was signed in Philadelphia. So there you have it.
At least I got that part right. Okay, good. Well, we're glad to have you.
Who says you can't get giggles? Who says you can't get giggles out of the U.S. Constitution? There you go.
Probably. Okay, great. And from rainy Sacramento, California, is it still raining there? Devin Tate, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's raining on and off. I was afraid I was going to get, carried right on down the river here. But luckily I'm inside now and dry. And, John, the Flat Earth Society is really taking off because now they report that they have members from around the globe.
All right, where did the joke came up?
Where did that one come?
I've never heard a joke on this show, and now that's all we have. Okay, I'm down the road.
This is great. All right, we got one more co-host in. I can't wait to hear what he's saying.
Yeah, well, let's hear another. We got another joke left.
From Houston, Texas, here's Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
I'm glad you guys made me laugh. That was funny. I do not have another corny joke, unfortunately.
Well, that's a disappointment.
I know. You should have another
so
corny
sorry.
Joke. That's okay. We'll forgive you this time. You better have one ready for next time, okay?
Will do.
Okay, good. All right, now tonight, all jokes aside, we got a fun guest. This guest was introduced to us by Robin Lecrae. He is a friend of hers. He consults with her on Bigfoot, and he has had a number of Bigfoot experiences. So I would like to introduce to the ScaryCast family of listeners and co-hosts, Phil. So, Phil, and I think you're from somewhere out in the Midwest, right?
Well, yeah, and I was surprised you said my name there when you said it was somebody special. I was waiting to hear who might be on the show with me. Yeah, I'm out in Kansas, sort of right in the smack in the middle of the United States. So
okay,
halfway to Canada,
right,
halfway to California.
Buddy, we got a Kansas native on this podcast, don't we, Devin?
Really?
We sure do. I grew up in Paradise, Kansas.
Well, I don't even know where Paradise is.
Well,
I mean,
I
you know where
it is. I've yet to find it.
All of Kansas is Paradise, right?
Exactly. If you know where Hayes is, that's the general
sure.
area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm north of Wichita about 20 minutes, so more centralized between Wichita and Salina.
And Phil, it was really funny. We were, for a summer, we did this podcast called Murder 123. It was about serial killers and stuff like that. And somebody gave us a serial killer, and I tracked him down to Paradise, Kansas. So I go to the Paradise, Kansas website, I guess the Facebook page, and there's a picture of some sign or marker for Paradise, Kansas, and it says photographed by Devin Tate. I thought, gee, what a small world. And then I realized, oh, that's right, that's where he's from. So it was great. ScaryCast getting all over the world. You know, ScaryCast, like the Flat Earth Society, is going all around the world. There you go. So there you
well,
go.
Well, I've got a corny joke. Since we skipped one, I'll go ahead and bring up the rear. Did
do
you guys hear that they are not going to make 12-inch rulers any longer?
Wait,
no,
I did not hear. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it'll get you here in a minute. Just keep thinking.
They're not going to make 12-inch rulers anymore. I am confused and dumbfounded. I don't know the answer to that.
If they made them longer than 12 inches, they wouldn't be 12-inch rulers.
That's right.
My gosh.
It's corny.
Okay.
I thought it fit.
Oh, my Lord. Is this what we've come to?
That's exactly it. But you know, Robin, we haven't had comedy night in a long time, so this has been good.
I know.
This has been
I'm
great.
Just astonished. I mean, really.
And I didn't volunteer. I was invited, so don't blame me.
Well, we're glad you're there.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like I said, this is a relaxed show. We just have fun.
Yeah.
All right, Phil, I'm going to start you off. Robin
okay.
has said that you had some Bigfoot experiences. Why don't you tell us some of them? We'd like to hear them, and then we'll ask you some questions about them.
I've got some questions for you guys, too. I made a list, as a matter of fact, because maybe you guys know more than I do.
We'll see.
5 years ago, I was a Bigfoot skeptic. And I thought, you know, I left my mind open to the possibility, but I thought, you know, there's been so many proven hoaxes with people making, you know, fake feet to wear on their shoes and stomp around and say that they found tracks. And none of those even looked believable to me. All those hoaxes seemed such obvious hoaxes. But then I saw other evidence that seemed more plausible. And I never really considered myself a researcher because I have not gone out looking for these creatures specifically. I haven't really dove into anything scientific regarding the subject. I just sort of thought it's possible, I suppose. There's a whole lot of land just in this country alone that people just don't walk across on a regular basis. I assume that there are places in this country that still haven't had human feet on them just because of their remoteness or ruggedness or whatever. So I was skeptically open to the idea. And then about 5 years ago, my wife and I were out hiking in the Flint Hills. If you don't know Kansas is not a mountainous state, and it's not a forested state. We have a few trees and a lot of flat earth. But the thing that really galvanized that they exist is the fact that even here in this place that doesn't have wide, expansive tracts of trees or mountainous areas, is that if I could have an encounter here, then it could happen anywhere. And what does that mean as far as who or what these beings are and what they're capable of? So I was hiking in the Flint Hills, picked a point on a map using Google Earth and said, hey, look, there's some trees and a creek in the hills. Let's go there, because it was August and it's hot out. So I thought, if I'm going to go hiking, it's not going to be out in the squelching sun. I'm going to want some shade. And if there's water in the creek, then that gives me an opportunity to cool off too. And so off we went. We drove to this place 80 to 100 miles from home to the east, and found it on an abandoned section of highway. They'd built new highway, and they just didn't tear up the old section for about a mile for some reason. I'm assuming it's to allow access to the properties adjacent to the new highway. But the highway had been abandoned long enough that there were waist-high weeds growing up down the middle of the highway in the cracks. So even this place doesn't get visited a lot by vehicles on a paved road. So I knew, hey, this might be a good hike because people don't come here. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that people just go trespassing on other people's property, but we hopped a fence, went down into the ravine where the creek runs. And I do that a lot because I don't leave anything behind. I don't leave my own footprints whenever I go out into these places. So I'm not harming anything. I'm not there to take anything other than maybe pictures and just take in nature. And I have been stopped on occasion. And when I explained what I was doing and why I was there, landowners have never had a problem with it. Nobody's ever said you can't come back or you need to leave now. They just said, oh, okay, well, enjoy yourself. So it works out okay for me. And maybe it's my demeanor. I don't know. But anyway, we hiked down into that ravine. Bigfoot is the last thing on my mind. This is 5 years ago. I'm openly skeptical about it. So, but I'm not thinking Bigfoot. I'm just going for a hike in the beautiful Flint Hills to see what I can see. And immediately when we get to the bottom of this ravine, it's a steep embankment off the road, probably 30 or 40 feet high, so it's a kind of a steep hike down into the ravine where the creek is. My wife kind of takes off, and I paused because what I saw on the ground was an impression where a log had been previously. And there was no log there now, and there were leaves covering the ground, but not where this impression was. It was absolutely void of leaves, and it was so fresh, granted this is August, it's not a rainy time of the year for us, it was so freshly gone that I could still see the impression that the bark made in the bare soil underneath the log. And by my estimation, I did not have a tape measure on me or anything because I wasn't looking for anything in particular when I went out there. I was just going for a hike. This log was probably 12 to 14 inches diameter, I'm guessing, and 14 to 16 feet long. And I thought, now that's really weird. Where is this log that was obviously here recently? It didn't make any sense to me. I called my wife over and said, hey, take a look at this. What do you think? What happened here? There's no visible signs of human presence in a very long time in this draw. And there was, because the trees are so thick down on the bottom, there was no access to get a vehicle to where this log was. And my wife immediately said, well, somebody probably took it. And so my next question is, well, how did they take it? There's no vehicle tracks, but it's gone. But it didn't get drug out of here because there's still an impression of the bark on the ground. And this is really soft bottom topsoil. So, you know, creek bottoms, super loamy soil. And you can leave a footprint in it, impression in it, barely by barely stepping on it. But there were still impressions of this bark, so I knew it had to be fresh, because just a little bit of rain would have disturbed that. And she said, well, maybe they cut it up. And I said, okay, what did they cut it up with? Because there's no sawdust on the ground. Well, she threw her hands up. I don't know. If she can't explain something, she walks away from it. I, on the other hand, want to dig and try and understand how things happen in our universe. And so I stood there for a while longer and scratching my head, could not figure out how this log had just disappeared recently. And while I was standing there by myself, then she called over to me. She said, hey, come look at this. This is weird. And so I walked towards her, which was in the direction of the creek. And she was standing there looking at something. And when I approached, I said, what is it? She said, look at these sticks stuck in the ground. And so there were a couple of tree branches stuck in the ground that in such a way that they formed a upright X. And I thought, well, that's obviously strange that these two tree branches, and they were identical in length above the ground. The very tips of the branches were level with each other. And what was odd was that one of them had the stick end stuck in the ground, the part that attached to the tree, and the other one had the narrow end stuck in the ground with the thick end up. And so I immediately thought, well, it was Kansas, a very windy state, that a windstorm came through and these fell out of the tree. So I looked up. Well, all the trees around were not very big. They were tall, but not big diameter. And none of the trees in the vicinity had branches as big around as these two. And we're not talking about big branches here. They were, the top of this X was maybe 4 feet off the ground. And they were maybe on the thick end, the diameter of a baseball bat. And so I couldn't figure out where did these branches come from, that they happened to fall in the same place, just at slightly different angles, to form this absolutely perfectly symmetrical X in the soil. And then it dawned on me that, you know, I've read about or heard people talk about Bigfoot leaving these markers, these X markers. And I've seen videos out of Colorado and Utah, and they're usually entire trees that people take videos of or pictures of. And I thought, I wonder if that's anything related even. Took a couple of pictures, and I grabbed one of the sticks to pull it out of the ground, and it was the one that had the narrow end shoved into the ground, was in the ground about 6 inches. And I thought, wow, how do you shove this pencil diameter stick in the ground 6 inches without it breaking? That seemed really odd. And I mentioned that to my wife, and of course she had no explanation, so she wasn't interested in how or why. And when I tried to put the stick back in the original hole, that tip did indeed break off, so I just jammed it in there. Now, so I screwed up this symmetrical X, but I didn't really care because I didn't know that it might or might not have any meaning. It was just a couple of sticks in the ground next to a creek. So we walked over to the creek, crystal clear, see every rock on the bottom of it, only a couple of feet deep, and a high bank on the other side. We're on the low side. The high bank is, I say high, it's only 3 feet. It's Kansas. That's pretty good elevation change. We heard something coming through the brush on the other side, and it was just a real thrashing. And we thought, what the heck? And we both were just staring in that direction. And it was coming from quite a ways off. But we thought, well, maybe there's a cow or something that's running through the brush. It was making that much noise. And it went on for, I don't know, 6 or 7 seconds coming towards us. And then out of the brush, that was probably chest high to me, 5 feet or so, emerged two buck deer. One of them was a pretty good size, maybe an 8-point. The other one just a single spike on either side. But they were running together, and they got to the edge of that drop-off on the creek where we were standing just on the other side, you know, 20 feet away, staring directly at them, not wearing camo. We're wearing hiking clothes. And I assumed that once they saw us, they would turn and bolt a different direction. Instead, they left off of the upper bank and ran straight past us and just a dead run. They paused for just a brief moment and then jumped off the bank and ran straight past us. I could have reached out and touched them both as they ran by. Now, I used to deer hunt, and I thought that's the oddest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen it, but it wasn't hunting season. It was August. And so I thought that was really odd. And still not thinking Bigfoot. Just wasn't part of that scenario. Just thought that it odd behavior by a couple of buck deer. And so we continued on our hike. We hiked all the way down this creek, probably about a mile or so, three quarters of a mile. And it was getting hotter by the minute. It was August. We got there probably about 10 o'clock in the morning and decided, you know what, I can see a clearing through the trees. Let's head west towards that clearing, and maybe we can catch a breeze because we're in the trees and it was just humid and hot and we were getting kind of miserable. We'd walked through the creek, so our feet were cool, but the rest of us was a sweaty mess. And so we cut across, aiming towards that clearing that looked like just a grassy pasture, just because it was brighter. When we got to the edge of it, it was completely covered in big bluestem, which is a native tall grass in Kansas that will grow 7-8 feet tall on a good year. At this point, it was about my height, about 6 feet tall. So we couldn't see beyond the edge of this grass. We could just see that, okay, this is a lot of grass, and we could see trees over the above the grass on the other side, and we knew that, you know, it's the other side of the valley. And so we started making our way through this grass, and there was no trail or anything. We were just cutting through the grass, and I smelled an odor. And my wife smelled it, too, and she was surprised that I could smell it because I can't smell bad odors very well. I have no idea what a skunk smells like, other than it's just kind of musky to me. Where my wife is rolling up the windows a mile from the dead skunk on the road, I can drive over the top of it and never smell anything. I can't smell a gas leak. So that olfactory sense doesn't work very well for me. Although I can smell cookies baking in the oven, Robin.
Hey, never met a cookie I didn't like.
So I said, you know what? What is making that smell? Because it's got to smell bad if I can smell it. And my wife said, yeah, it's just horrible, putrid smell. And so I start aiming to where my nose is taking me because this is odd for me. I don't usually smell things so strongly that I could actually follow it to its source. And we were making our way through this tall grass, and we came across an opening in the grass that turned out to be the grass was matted down. I immediately assumed, oh, this is a deer bed. But then when we got into the middle of it, I was expecting to see a dead deer, a rotting carcass, because that's kind of the odor. It was kind of like a rendering plant. If you've ever been around one of those, they do not smell good. And I expected to see a rotting deer carcass. And we stepped into the opening, and it was absolutely clean. There was nothing there, and it was much bigger than any deer bed that I'd ever come across. Most of them are just about the size of a deer, and if there's more than one, it's a couple deer size. This thing was about 10 feet across and fairly close to a circle. It may have been a little more oval, but that's where the smell was coming from, and it was just horrible. My wife was about to gag on it. It was so bad, and she was telling me, why are we here? Ask me, you know, this is stupid. Why are we standing here? This smells horrible. And I could smell it, and it was strong. But my curiosity was, what's making this smell? And I'm looking all around for, you know, any sign of something had died there but had been removed. There was no fur, hair, blood stains. There were no maggots or rotten flesh, no bones, no nothing. It was absolutely clear. Like something had just walked in a circle, trampled this area down. And I thought, that is the strangest thing ever. My wife finally got the best of me. She said, come on, we've got to get out of here. This smells too bad. I'm going to throw up. I said, oh, okay, fine. Still not thinking Bigfoot. This is just the weirdest valley I've ever explored. And we turned to walk away, And within about two steps, the smell was completely gone. And I noticed it. I asked my wife. I said, "You still smell it?" She said, "Huh, no." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Well, the wind must have switched." I said, "The wind was coming out of the south, and we were walking to the north in the beginning to find the smell. It was traveling upwind, the smell was." And I said, "No, the wind didn't switch, and we're only a couple feet away." So I said, "Hang on." And I walked back to that clearing. There was no smell, absolutely nothing. I thought, wow, that's the strangest thing. And I'm just having a hard time wrapping my mind around these odd occurrences. And so we were hot. We'd been there a couple of hours just kind of wandering around in this valley. We said, "All right, let's hike out of here. We've probably got chiggers and ticks at this point wading through this tall grass." So we hike up the other side. We get to the rim rock, which is that shelf of rock for those who don't have rim rocks in your part of the country. That shelf of rock just under the surface of the soil that protrudes at the top of a hill or the rim of the hill. And we decided to sit down and take a break. And we sat down on the stone, and it also makes a really good path because it's usually pretty flat layers of limestone. So it makes it easy to walk. You get up on the stone and you can walk all the way around the rim of whatever hill. We took a seat, we had a drink, we sat there for a few minutes, and I just kept thinking, what is all of this? What does all of this mean? Why is this valley? I've never come across anything like this before. It doesn't make any sense. We got up to leave. No further incidents until we got on the road. We stepped over the fence, climbed up the small embankment now because we're in a different section. We're not near the creek. Small embankment. As soon as we got onto the road, something started yelling from down in the valley. And I stopped dead in my tracks because I thought, that's really strange. And my wife kept walking. I said, "Stop. Wait a minute. Listen." And she stopped, and it yelled again. I said, "What is that noise?" She said, "Well, how should I know?" I said, "Well, what do you think it is? Because I don't want to be alone in this. You know, I don't want to be the only one thinking this is nutty." And she said, "Well, I don't know. It's probably a cow." And I said, "Okay, we were just in that valley. We went from one side to the other, almost the entire length of that valley, about a mile's worth." I said, "Did you see any cows?" She said, "Well, no." I said, "Did you see any evidence of cows?" "Well, no." I said, "Okay, the fence is in horrible shape. Couldn't keep a cow in. What makes you think that's a cow making that noise down in the valley where we were just at?" She said, "Well, what else could it be?" And I said, "I don't know. You tell me." Now, in my mind, it's clicked. I know what this is now. And she said, "Well, it has to be a cow. What else can it be?" And I said, "Look, I worked and lived on a ranch with you and the kids when I got out of college. We were surrounded by cattle. I said, did you ever hear a cow make that noise?" She said, "Well, no, but I haven't heard every cow in the world." So that's logical in her mind. And I said, "That's not a cow." About the time I said that, now this was coming from sort of the end of the valley. It's where it sounded like it was coming from. And we're on the west side of the valley on the road. The valley is probably half a mile across. After we discussed what it is or isn't, got the same sound coming then from the east side of the valley. Sounded like it was closer to the road, like it was coming down the road towards us, that the sound was traveling down the road towards us. I said, "Okay, there's another one over there." I said, "That would be two cows in the valley with no evidence of any cows being in the valley. What is it?" He said, I don't know. We started walking towards the Jeep that was parked on the east end of the valley on the road. And when we got about to the middle where we went down, where the stream crosses under the road, then we heard a third yell. I say a third yell, a third series of yells, but it was from where we exited the valley clear on the west side. So now it's kind of formed a triangle of these yells. And so the common, from what I hear on the internet, the common yell that people describe is these loud, bone-rattling roars, and this was not that. And the only way I can describe this is, I don't know if it's a trend now, but when I was in college and enjoying the nightlife of certain adult establishments, you know, where alcohol might not be involved. It seemed like college girls, when yeah. plied with enough alcohol, like to show off certain body parts, and inevitably, every time they did that, they would yell, and it would be a woo-hoo, or just a long woo, and that's what it sounded like. It was high-pitched, and that's all it was.
Excuse me, so it sounded like Ric Flair. Did it sound like Ric Flair?
No, it wasn't quite as raspy. But it sounded like it sounded like women. It really did. But they would have had to have enormous lungs to be able to project it as loud as it was from that distance. And that's
alcohol.
Yes, and alcohol. And there was no partying going down there. We didn't hear anything other than the deer running through the brush and our own footsteps the whole time. There was nobody else there. And we're quite a ways from any real town or city. There's a town a couple miles west, but it's a sleepy little town that has maybe a dozen houses and old retired farmers. I doubt they're tramping around out in the creek bottoms yelling their heads off in the middle of August when it's 100 degrees out. But it's possible. Not very plausible. Possible, I suppose. So we got in the Jeep and drove home. That's the end of that. I quizzed my wife on it a couple more times on the way home, what she thought about all that. She had no opinion, didn't really want to talk about it. It was out of her wheelhouse. So I left it alone. And that's when I learned, that my wife is neither here nor there about the subject. She has never, according to her, she's never experienced or seen anything, even though she was right there at the time, that would lend to her believing that these are real. But then she says, she's open-minded enough to say, but I don't know everything. So she admits that maybe it's possible, but she's not concerned with it in any way.
Yeah, people have to come to it in their own time. When they're ready,
right.
They do. I don't even to say I know what would make a person, you know, get to that point, because it's different for everybody. You're talking about something that we've been programmed doesn't exist, and you're changing their whole reality.
Right.
So even
right.
when, like in your situation, you guys were out in the woods and you literally saw countless signs. Really. I mean, it wasn't just one or two. It was sign after sign after sign after sign. So obviously you were in their territory. You were in their hunting area. You know, all of these things were going on, but it still goes against the grain of her core belief system.
Right, right. And it sort of did for me too, but I've always been accepting of ideas that I didn't fully grasp because I looked at it as a challenge to see if I could figure out more. And so when we left there, I was pretty firm believer. Okay, I think I know what this was, and they do exist. Okay, great. That's all. And that was it. It wasn't, okay, I've got to go find more about this. I've got to go see if I can come back and recreate it. There was none of that. None of that crossed my mind even. The only thing that crossed my mind was complete acceptance that, okay, these things exist. That has to be what that is. I have no other explanation. Fast forward about 2 weeks later, I'm riding my motorcycle to work, and big green road sign on the side of the highway, it's a four-lane divided highway with a median in the middle, grass median in the middle, and the route I take every day on the way to work or night. Now, this happened to be early morning. I leave the house about 5 o'clock, and this was about 6 miles from home, so it only took me a few minutes from leaving the house, so I was in this area. It's still dark outside. Headlights on. I'm not riding quickly because I'm heading to work, not home. And I see a shadow, what I believe to be a shadow, in front of one of these large green highway signs in the right-of-way to the right side of the road. And this is all happening in real time in a matter of a few seconds that I'm processing in my mind and trying to figure out what's going on. And I'm rolling along about 55 or 60 miles an hour. So I'm covering some ground, but I'm not really racing. So it's taking me, and this is about, I see it from about a mile away, and I just thought it was odd. It struck out at me as, what is this black shadow across this road sign? And I didn't think of it as being something in front of the road sign because there are no trees. This is Kansas. There's no trees. The highway department doesn't let them grow in the easement or in the right-of-ways. They mow that stuff. It's just grass. And I knew that because I've been driving that road for years. There are no trees. But I thought it was a shadow. I looked away, and this is just split-second thinking and observing. I looked away as I was riding because another car was coming towards me on the other side of the highway, so the headlights directed, you know, caught my eye, and I moved over towards that car. When I looked back to the road in that split second, the shadow was gone, or what I thought was a shadow. And I thought, well, that's odd. In my mind, I started rationalizing it as, well, maybe there was a heavy dew or something, and my headlight changed angles on that sign. Or I was trying to figure out scientifically as best I could why there was a dark patch up through the middle of that sign. And my only thought was, is there a cedar tree that I just haven't noticed that somehow at certain angles you can, it gets between where I'm at and the sign, but you don't notice it if you're not looking at that right precise point on the road. But I didn't remember ever seeing a cedar tree because it was kind of a taller, narrow shadow or dark spot. But I looked back toward the sign. There was nothing there. So, okay, no big deal. Another car came from the north, headed towards me, drew my eyes over to that side of the road. When I looked back, I was probably 100 yards from that sign at that point because this is all happening at 55 or 60 miles an hour. In a mile's time, so that's about a minute span. And when I looked back to my side of the road after that second car passed, it was standing there just off the shoulder. And what I saw with my looking through my helmet visor was feet, legs, knees, thighs, waist, up to the chest, and two arms hanging at its side, and everything covered in hair.
Oh, wow.
Blackish gray hair. And it freaked me right out. I twisted the throttle on the bike, and I was doing 100 miles an hour in a couple of seconds, and I was getting out of there because I didn't know what that was because it was so large. I couldn't see any higher than the chest because I had my helmet on, and I didn't look up. I was just, you know, caught it in my peripheral, and my eyes moved over that direction. And I went by it at 60 miles an hour. So it was a quick glance, but I knew what I had seen. It was clear as day. I was right next to it. So that, you know, that shoulder is maybe 8 feet wide, and its feet were in the grass just off the shoulder. And the grass was freshly mowed, so it wasn't tall grass. I could see everything. And I went to work thinking, you know, I just saw a Bigfoot on the way to work in nowhere, Kansas, without any mountains or trees nearby. This doesn't make any sense to me because everybody says they live in the forest and the mountains.
They'll go right into the cities.
What's that?
I said, they'll go right in the cities. They don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I learned that later on. But that was my
if
awakening.
If you didn't know, it'd be shocking.
Right. And so my what I deduced was maybe in order to see these things, you have to be actively accepting of their existence. It can't be, you can't be in a state of denial. You can't be
right.
Questioning. You have to, before they're going to allow themselves to be seen in this manner, they have to know that you already know. I don't know if
that's
you know, it's just a theory.
It's true. There's a saying that says believing is seeing. And for years when I would talk to people and, you know, they would say, I'm not saying that you're making it up or anything, but for me, believing is seeing. And I finally said to somebody, you need to switch that around. Or, I mean, everybody would say seeing is believing. That was the thing,
right.
Seeing is believing. And I said, you need to switch it around because that's not how it works. Believing
right.
is how you open up your mind to accept what you see.
Because and that's what I came to on my own.
Yeah. And
that was
the
only
way
I could justify it. How did this happen? How did I go 50 years without ever seeing these things and just thinking that maybe they exist to 2 weeks earlier having circumstances change my mind to, no, that's what that was, and they are here. And then now all of a sudden I see one. That's the only thing it can be, is that my mind and my heart changed in favor of they absolutely exist. And so,
and you're 100% right. You really are. I mean, and it takes people a long time to get to that point. But when you open, and this goes for all cryptids and paranormal beings and elementals, dimensionals, all of it. When you get to that point in your mind where you say, okay, not everything is the way I thought it was. We don't know everything that's out there. And
absolutely,
I'm willing to give it a shot. You start seeing all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's like this neon beacon that goes up, and everything starts showing itself. Now, you and I were having conversations about contact that you're now getting.
Right, right. Yeah, and so that sort of started a snowball effect that again, I attribute only to being open enough to accept that they're real, that I felt like, and this is how I ended up contacting you, because I had seen you on a YouTube video, and you seemed like a credible person who absolutely knew more than me, and I thought, I've got to reach out to this person and find out if this is even possible, what I'm thinking, and you confirmed these things to me. But yeah, it just sort of seemed to snowball. And I hear a lot of people talk about this sense of dread that overcomes them, or this, you know, this real fear for their lives, or that these are, you know, bloodthirsty creatures that you've got to be afraid of at all costs, and that they'll snap your legs or snap your neck or rip your arms off and all of these other things. And I was a little confused because I never had those feelings at all in the course of the following, you know, 5 years. I never had the feeling when I was out in nature and having things happen that I was in any kind of danger, that I was being threatened, or I just thought that anytime something would happen that seemed like a negative, that I can't think of this in human terms. I have to think of this as it could possibly be something other than what I think it is intended to do. And out of respect for whatever's out there, you know what? Maybe it's time to check out. You know, if I'm invaded their space, they've allowed it for this long, and now something has been thrown at me or whatever, they're just saying, hey, it's time to go. We need our privacy too. And I just take off, no big deal. And I think that's sort of maybe worked to my advantage. I guess you can call it an advantage.
I agree.
That I haven't gone looking for them. I haven't tried to uncover them, you know, to expose them for anything. I've just lived my life, and I enjoy being outdoors and seeing new places and all things wildlife related. That's where I just feel more comfortable. And things happen to me that neither good nor bad. They're just things that happen. And if they're Bigfoot that's doing it, okay, fine. As long as nobody's hurting me, if something gets thrown in my direction, doesn't mean it was thrown at me. It was just thrown in my direction. So I never took anything as being threatening. Until, like I told Robin, because I reached out to her immediately after it happened the first time, I was getting weird visions just as I would lay down to go to sleep at night. And I had heard about MindSpeak. I'd heard a lot of people talk about MindSpeak. And I'm the type of person that doesn't discount anybody's story. And I think, in fact, the more outlandish, the more believable it probably is. And the reason for that is, in my mind, being a fairly logical individual, if I wanted to make up a story to convince somebody of something that I had made up, I wouldn't make it so unbelievable that they would never believe me. I would try and make it as believable as possible.
Right.
And so when you throw these kinds of things in here, like mind speak, for most people, that is not believable. And so when someone talks about having experienced mind speak, I tend to believe that person because it's not believable. And why would you make up a story to spread that isn't believable? So therefore, it must be true.
People before. I'm like, if I wanted to say something to get attention, why would I say things that I know people are going to question?
Right, right. It doesn't make any sense. So I had several, and you guys jump in if I'm rambling.
Yeah, well, I do, Phil. What I'd like to do is let me give everybody a chance to make a comment or ask you a question, and then we'll let you proceed. So,
okay.
Trey, do you have a comment or question? I'll go Trey, and then I'll go Kyler, and then I'll go with Devin. So, Trey, have you got a question or a comment?
Well, the comment is that all the things that you've experienced, Phil, are pretty standard kind of stuff we talk about on this program. I mean, you've seen the crosses, the structures. You've seen areas where the ground cover is pushed down. You've seen evidence of movement, and you've actually seen a sighting. So I think you're spot on. Now I want you to go back to the mind speak part because that's still yet another facet. But none of this is novel. But it's
right.
Definitely
it's
novel
for
you.
Sure.
And all of a sudden. You're tuned in. It's like somehow your wavelength got your frequency was modulated, and you're on the same wavelength. And Robin can speak to this more appropriately than any of us. But it sounds like you've had a real experience, and it sounds like the real deal to me.
Well, it doesn't sound believable, and I've tried to tell a couple of people since then, and I usually get met with, okay, you're crazy, or what were you drinking or smoking, or something like that. It's just not believable. And I've mentioned that to each person that has given me that reaction and say, okay, well, if you don't feel this is believable, why would I have gone to the trouble to tell you about it if I knew that this was going to be your reaction? I said, that doesn't make any sense. And one guy even told me, went so far as to say, well, I think you think it happened. And I didn't like that. That didn't sit well with me because it felt like he was calling me a liar. Not just I was making up stories, but he said, I think you think that happened. And I said,
I think if it happened to you, obviously you're going to think it happened.
Exactly.
So I would just turn it back and say, well, and maybe you don't think what I experienced happened, but I'm telling you what I experienced. And you can – does it matter if he believes you or not?
Right, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Does
at
that,
the end of the day, I let it go. And
your
say,
perception,
whatever.
Does that change your perception of what you encountered? No. So, you know, whatever.
Right, and that's most of the world.
Yeah, what I've started doing is when people will say something to that nature with me or will prove it to me, and I turn it around. I've gotten to the point, and I try not to be rude about it, but I'll turn around and I'm like, okay, you're going to tell me that this didn't happen. I don't want you to explain it. You explain what I just witnessed, not just one thing, but like in your case, Phil, especially your first time when you were out there, it was not just one or two things. You're looking at maybe 10 things. So maybe one thing you can dispute. But when you have that many things at one time, and this sounds stupid, but if it walks like a duck and it looks like it's a duck, it's a duck. I mean,
you had a constellation of pretty sure signs that you had Bigfoot activity.
Right.
I don't know how else to describe that to somebody. You know, that's
well, and
that's what
like
you experience.
A common, a common request by people who haven't experienced anything is, then why don't we have a body? And so I go back to the old textbook hunting answers. How come we don't find dead bears in the woods? You just don't. Well, unless you shot it. You don't find any dead bears, but we know bears exist.
Well, and what people don't, and you tell them and they don't want, they really don't want the answers. They want to ask the questions.
Yeah.
They just don't want to stick around and listen to the answers. And number one, you're exactly right. You don't find bears in the woods, very seldom, because the decomposition rate in the woods is so astronomical. But the other thing that people don't get, any time a body's been found, the government has seized it.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure. If anybody blabs about it,
yeah,
the men in black are going to show up.
And they really and truly do. I know people that have been threatened by them. And not only that, and this is another really key part that most people don't really get, they bury their dead. They don't give them up easily. And they do a type of a funeral. They do a ceremony. They're placed in the grave a certain way. They have a whole thing that they do, and then they all go into 4 days of silence after. These graves, the way they're marked, unless you're somebody that knows what you're looking for, you will never find them. You will never realize that it's a grave. But they bury their dead, and they will fight for their dead.
See, and I always just assumed that if they are truly interdimensional, that the dead are carried back to whatever other dimension.
And in some cases, that's entirely possible.
Yeah,
that's
not
something that you can dispute, because depending on the group, depending on how much they rely on the paranormal abilities, that is something that could absolutely happen. But they for the most part, they do bury them.
Huh.
They really and truly do. And they have a whole funeral process. They, you know, out of respect for the dead, you're going to see where 4 days of silence afterwards.
Hmm.
You know, if it's one in the hierarchy, it could be longer. I mean, it's a really complicated thing. And, you know, all these, and I've had people come at me for years and say, well, where's the dead body?
Yeah.
And I'm like, prove to me that what I'm telling you isn't true. Instead of keep throwing things at me and telling me this is why you don't believe me, give me a reason why what I'm saying isn't true. Because you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
you know, I always tell everybody, it's
the,
not,
the
I would
default
not put
is because,
on this planet
because you're crazy.
To prove anything.
Yeah. Yeah, the default is because you're crazy. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Hey, Kyler, you're next. Ask a question or make a comment.
Well, okay, the whole thing with the crazy, too, I mean, that's how most people are programmed, too. I mean, you see them in the movies and TV shows showing these apparent whack jobs with all these things that actually happened. So then they're now portraying just the stuff that they've grown up with and seen because they're not supposed to know. Obviously, I mean, that's just how it is. It sucks. But there was a guy that I actually work with, and I was explaining this to him, too. You know, it's the same. I use this analogy like, well, you know, you get a brand new car, and all of a sudden you start seeing those cars everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
I use that myself.
Yeah, like you have some experience like this, and I guarantee you're probably going to start seeing more and more and more and more.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not scared me, but it was kind of like it was strange what he said to me, because he's like, well, I know I don't know everything. I know there's some things out there that no one can explain, but it has nothing to do with me and it doesn't affect me, so why should I care? And
yeah,
I was
where my wife's
with
at.
The conversation ended. I was like, there's nothing I could say right now that could show you anything.
Right.
You got to pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
That's just awesome that you had that experience.
Right. So I don't even bring up the subject with my wife anymore because I know where she stands on it. It's not important because it doesn't affect her personally. So, but yeah,
right.
I assume that there are other people like her where they could get hit in the head with a brick and still not realize that just happened. And just denial because it's outside of what they know of their reality, and it's just too much to process. Yeah, and so it's easier to just turn around and walk away from it.
All right. Okay. Well, good. And finally, Devin, comment or question for our guest.
Oh, yeah, I just want to hear more about the mind speak, but I'm really happy that someone's finally representing Bigfoot in Kansas. I had not heard any Kansas Bigfoot stories yet, so a shout-out to my home state.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of them, actually. And what's strange is someone reached out to me, and I don't know if it was on Facebook or wherever, because I generally do not post Bigfoot-related things on my Facebook because I just don't want the ridicule. I don't have time for the drama, and I know that's what I would get. I've got a lot of jerk friends. I mean that in the nicest possible way. They're going to give me misery if I just were to come out in the open and start talking about things that I know to be real, that they believe to be a hoax. But this person reached out to me on Facebook, and I cannot remember what the connection was, and maybe I commented on somebody else's, another group or something. And this person happens to live about 60 miles west of me, west of Hutchinson, if you know where that's at, Devin. And
I do.
Yeah, and said that I think there's a river that runs down, and I don't think it's the Arkansas River where she's at, but it may be. But she says that she has fairly regular activity that she assumes is Bigfoot because of the noises that come out of the open expanses at night. She said that she can't explain them otherwise. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. That's somebody else in Kansas. And then I ran into a woman at Walmart, of all places, here in my hometown. And this is a small town, 14,000 people or 17,000 people. And I was walking into Walmart, and I saw a Bigfoot sticker on the back window of the SUV, but it was a family of Bigfoot. You know how the mom, dad, and little kids, they were all Bigfoot silhouettes. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. I was going to take a picture of it, and I was getting my phone out to take a picture of it because I just thought it was kind of funny. And the woman, the owner of the vehicle, walked up behind me, and she said, "Do you like that?" And I said, "Yeah, is this yours?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "That's pretty cool." I said, Are you into Bigfoot? Because I never know really how to bring the subject up, especially with a stranger. She goes, well, I don't know. What do you mean by into? I said, do you believe they really exist? And she said, well, the one I saw existed. I said, oh, really? And I said, and where did you see it? And she said, oh, just right up the road here. And so we had a short conversation, and I didn't think to ask, hey, well, let's exchange contacts and keep each other updated if anything else happens. Now, this was 4.5 years ago, so very early on in my experience. And we went our separate ways, but I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And I've heard a couple of other southeast Kansas references to Bigfoot, but that's, you know, getting closer to Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, where there have been plenty more sightings than in Kansas. And it's there are more trees there, more water there, so it stands to reason if that's habitat that they enjoy living in, that there wouldn't be that many of them towards the center of the state.
You would be amazed how many are there.
What's that?
I said you would actually be really amazed how many are there. These.
Well, that's what I've come to realize now.
Yeah, these people, these type of people, because that's what they are, the ability to adapt to any situation is just impossible to comprehend. You know, we get forced to adapt to certain situations, and most of our people struggle to adapt. You know, you have certain people that, you know, they can camp, they can do whatever, and they, you know, it's not too hard for them. But in most times, people are out of their comfort zone, and it is harder to adapt. Where this type of people, they can adapt anywhere. If there's no trees, not a problem. They'll figure a way to do it. They'll make sure that they're cloaked. I mean, the cloaking is a real thing. And
well, that's what I was going to say. If they have all the abilities that a lot of people speculate about, then they should be able to live anywhere.
And they do. That's exactly it. And I've talked about this before on here. Detroit, Michigan, perfect example. Now, you're talking downtown Detroit. You're talking subdivision on subdivision of not only crowds of people, but abandoned houses. You couldn't find a blade of grass, let alone a tree.
Right.
And several years ago, there was one living in an abandoned house. And wow. a couple went out for the day. They were actually house hunting because they wanted to move out of the subdivision because it had just gotten really, you know, run down was my understanding. And they had gone.
Well, the property taxes are lower there.
Yeah, exactly. They had gone that day and looked at houses, and they got back that evening. It was starting to get dark out, and they pulled up to the corner stop sign, and as they did, the wife happened to look off to her left at this house. And here stands this large Bigfoot in the yard. And as soon as it saw that it had been spotted, it turned around and it ran, and the bay window had been broken out, and it just jumped back in the bay window and went back in the house.
Nice.
They take over abandoned buildings. People have no idea. You see all these old farms and stuff, and, you know, it looks like farms or barns or whatever that have been there for 100 years. Trust me, there's people that are living in those places.
Well, I always wonder about that. Because that's one of my passions, too, is exploring old, abandoned, you know, 100-plus-year-old buildings in
yeah.
rural Kansas. And I always wonder that, you know, you walk into an old farmhouse and there's not a bit of furniture except an old steel chair sitting in the middle of the room. And I always wonder, why did they leave this one chair sitting in the middle of the
yeah.
living room? And it's not a piece of living room furniture. It's like a modern folding steel chair. Why is that sitting
yeah.
here in this old stone house that barely has a roof on it?
Find
I don't know why.
These buildings, the barns or these old houses, you know, that are so old and they're falling down, and you'll go in and there won't be anything there. And then you'll find leaves and sticks and brush.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is that in there? I mean, yeah, it could have blown in and maybe some broken windows, but to this amount, it's because someone's camped out there.
Right. And see, what I wonder about
really
that chair is
all of it.
Yeah, you know, what I wonder about that chair is not are they sitting in that chair, but is it trying to make it look as though a human lives here?
Yeah.
You know, is it something that was collected from somewhere else and brought there so that if anybody should happen to see that they would assume this is a human living here and nothing else? I don't know.
And that's possible. That's really possible because the intelligence that they have, they're capable of that thought process.
Neat.
Right. This is Dr. John. I wanted to get one comment in that might help Phil and might be some food for thought for the rest of our panelists. I've done a lot of thinking about the nature of the mind of the skeptic. And what I have found is there are three main ways the skeptic will try to discredit you. And the number one is they will simply say without any proof, that's a lie. They will say it without proof, and they'll say that's a lie. You can't get past it. The second thing that they'll say is, well, that's too fantastic to believe. And then the third one that they do, and this is, I think, the most frequent, is they will attack the man. That's an old Greek way of trying to win a debate, is attack the person who is making the statement of a sighting or something. So there are three ways that I have found, and I'm trying to gather enough evidence so that I can write an article. It'll probably go, in fact, I'm writing a book with John LeMay called Bloodsuckers, and I think it might be able to go in there because we've got all these blood-sucking animals that seem to have appeared between the 30s and the 60s throughout a wide band of the South, from California to the Carolinas, and we discussed that a little bit that last time John was on here. And I have learned that when I start talking about this, one of three things happens. You know, they either call you a liar, or they say it's too fantastical to believe. Fantastical being a word from Ava Gabor on Green Acres. Fantastical. and then, of course, they attack the man. Well, you know, you're on drugs, or you're whatever. And so that's the three main ways that they do it. And then I don't know, Phil, I think you were talking about the fact that, or it was Kyler said, you know, when you get a certain particular car, then all of a sudden you see it all over the road. Well, now, Dr. Trey Donaway and I had a nice talk one night on ScaryCast. It was just the two of us. And, Trey, I hope you remember this. We talked about the reticular activation system. It's like once you start recognizing something, you seem to see it all over. Do you remember we had that conversation?
Yes.
And so I think that plays a part in it. That's a legitimate thing, and it's known in the sales world. Once you're able to sell that to a certain clientele, that means you can see that you can identify them where other people can't, and therefore it's like right now I'm moving into the world of employee benefits. I'm getting out of straight life insurance, and I'm going into employee benefits. And now all of a sudden I'm seeing clients all over that I can contact that I couldn't see 6 months ago because I
changed your focus.
Had the first one. Well, no, I did my first one. It worked. I got paid for it. Yay. Everything worked. And so now all of a sudden I have the confidence that I can see these clients that I couldn't see 6 months ago. And so it's a great, in fact, you know, it's a great thing for my professional life, so I can afford my passion, which is the paranormal and Comic-Con. Come on, guys, it's great. So anyway,
yep.
There are reasons for a lot of this, but I hope I explained a little bit about my findings on skeptics, because that's what you deal with, that's what Robin deals with, that's what we all deal with, skeptics. It doesn't have to be Bigfoot. It can be anything that we're talking about. We're dealing with skeptics, and they have three main ways of trying to come at you. And I think if you know those ways that they come after you, you're better equipped to defend yourself. It's like if you're in one political party and the other political party is constantly attacking you, you need to be attacking them. It's not a matter of, well, it's not the nice thing to do. No, you got to sometimes fight fire with water. Or at least fight fire with fire. I mean, you know, I think that you can't just lay down and take it. You can't. And so that's my advice, and I'll keep saying it, and hopefully there'll be an article in Bloodsuckers about skeptics. I hope John will take it to heart that I'm trying to help the world with that article. So, you know, we'll see. But anyway, I tell you what, we don't have a whole lot more time. But you, Mark, Phil, you said you had some questions for us.
Well,
right?
I do. I have a short list of questions, and it's maybe more than you can put in the time frame. But you know,
well,
I get them out there anyway, and you guys can revisit them at any point.
We got about 15 minutes, so whoever's got an answer, whether it's Robin, Trey, Devin, or Kyler, or even me. Oh, my goodness, even me. Just whoever's got an answer, yell it out. I think it'll be interesting because we as a panel never really get asked questions, and I think it's quite a nice thing to do. So, buddy, I'm going to give you 15 minutes. Start asking away.
Okay, these are all Bigfoot related. So the common theory on Bigfoot is that they've been here since before humans, yet they contain human DNA, the mitochondrial DNA. And so my question is, what were they before they obtained the human DNA? What was their form? What did they come from that was different than what they are now if they were here before and had to wait on the human DNA to arrive?
All right, Robin, I'm going to answer this the way Melba Ketchum answered it, because I think her answer is correct. Is that all right?
You go right ahead.
I want to take this 25-point toss up on the GE College Bowl, because 16,000 years ago that DNA strain started, and it turns out that it is human mothers from the Middle East, Africa, and parts of Asia and parts of Europe, and unknown primate. and it's a 16,000-year strand of DNA. And that's what we got. I mean, that's where the Bigfoot – I think that's where the Bigfoot came from, and I think that is absolutely the best explanation. I've thought about – you know, I've spent many nights thinking about what Melba said, and I think she's right. Anybody wants
but
to read her paper,
I got to say they came from primate. They're no more primate than we are.
Well, she said primate unknown origin, which means something like us.
I hadn't heard the primate included in that description.
No.
I just heard unknown origins. But I hadn't read any of Melvin Ketchum's material personally.
Yeah, and I'm not saying John's wrong because I just don't recall that part. The father's unknown, 100% unknown.
Right.
And we know why.
And that's what I'm going off of. That's where that question comes from.
Yeah, the primate that's in it, but it's not any more primate than us. Now, John could be
100%
right. Right.
Yeah.
John could be 100% right. And he is more qualified as far as to read Melba's paper because I am hopeless when I try to read it. I am not a scientist. I'm an experiencer. And I go to read that paper, and I am on the phone with her while I'm doing it going, okay, explain this to me in, you know, dumb people terms, line to line. So John is much more qualified as far as the reading of the paper and knowing what it means than I will even come close to being. Now, just from what I've learned from them, you know, Melba's study showed 15,000 years back, and it's supposed to be before us. But these are something that are, you know, these were created. They didn't just pop up. They were created, and I don't think anybody really knows 100% 15,000 years what they were before they got hybridized with us.
Okay, so your thought is that it was just the DNA that got hybridized and not a physical being that went through a process of being hybridized.
I don't know, because you're talking about, and John's very accurate when he says, you know, about the whole primate. Well, we're primate too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, I mean, that is correct, but she doesn't, I don't recall, and I'm probably wrong, so don't quote me on it. I don't think she uses the primate in it as much as she does everything else, because they aren't, they're not any more primate than we are. I mean, we're all part primate. So the primates would have had, even if it was primate, the primates would have to have been there 15,000 years too.
Right.
You know, and so that's a possibility. I mean, I think it's an excellent question. I wish I could be more thorough in the answer on it, that one. And I think John, you know, was really close on it too. I just think that there's no way of actually knowing 100%. I mean, 15,000 years ago, you're talking dinosaurs, and back with the dinosaurs, I don't know when the cavemen came out, but,
have you asked
they were
that
hybridized.
Question, Robin, have you asked that question? What were you before what you are now?
Yeah, and all they tell me is they were the people.
Oh, okay. So they don't have any more explanation than we do.
It's not that they don't. That's just what they've said. They said they came from another time and space, and that they were the people. They were the magical people. That's what they said. And then I just asked them while you were talking to them, or while you were stating the question. I mean, I think John is probably more accurate than what I am on it, but I know that when we use the word primate, we have to be careful because it wasn't like a monkey cross or something like that. I mean, it's no more primate than us. It is primate. He's 100% right.
Melba said that to me several times. Just it was primate unknown origin, which means anything like a mammal, and that's what she explained it to me. And it was very interesting. Is I downloaded her paper, I put it out, I read it. It's a different paper than it was 3 years ago. It's just
I believe you 100%. And like I said, the science stuff, you know more about the science than I do. Like I can tell you about the paper and the ins and outs and all that, but the scientific stuff, I don't even try to give a proper explanation. You know, I mean, I know what was explained to me. I know what I've read, but you're more qualified as far as to read the paper.
Well, I'm just going on what she said And I know it's a stretch. It's not a National Science Foundation funded piece of research, but it's research and privately funded. And, you know, it's what it is. I mean, you can either believe it, you know, you can either say it's a lie, you can say it's fantastical, or you can go after it. And those, one of those three things, I mean, I think if you don't like it, you just say, I don't like it, and then go on. But, you know, the category of a skeptic is someone that wants to cause harm and doesn't want to go to the trouble to disprove something. And that's kind of where I'm, you know, I'm kind of like not happy with them for that. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but the thing of it is whether you like the truth or not, that doesn't even have anything to do with it, because you can't change the truth because it's the truth. So it's
right.
One of those things that you don't have to like this as the truth, but this is the way it is, so suck it up, buttercup, and deal with it.
Well, something to that effect, yes. That's right. Build me up, buttercup. That's right. Foundation. Build me up, buttercup. So, you know, okay, ask another question. And I'm going to ask Trey, Devin, or Kyler to weigh in, because Robin and I weighed in on that one, and it was fun. So ask us another question.
Next question has to do with portals. You know, I have my own theories on it, but I've heard a lot of different people in a lot of different venues say that, you know, these portals exist all over the planet. We don't know how many portals there are, and we don't know where any of them are or whatever, but we have people that swear that they have a portal near them or something to that effect. And my thought is these supposed portals, I've never witnessed it. I'm not saying they don't exist. I've just never witnessed it. I assume that it's true. But it seems more realistic to me that if a being is using a portal as a means to travel, that those portals would travel with them and not just be stuck in a location, so that if you wanted to get from point A to point B, well, the closest portal is still, you know, quite a distance from point A. You should choose another point to go to, because we don't have a portal in that location. It seems to me like that if anything makes sense about portals for me, is that these beings create the portal, that they're able to somehow manipulate the time-space continuum or whatever it is to open these doors to end up where they want to be, not just somewhere in the vicinity of where they want to be. And they wouldn't have to travel then to find another one to get back to where they came from.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. Does anybody have any comments on portals?
I've never seen a portal. I've never experienced a portal, but we have somebody on the panel who has.
Sweet.
I'm not trying to hog the talking, guys, so if you have anything to say, you're welcome to it.
No, Robin, these are questions for you. I'm just an idiot about this stuff, but you know. You've had experience.
Okay.
You're not hogging.
Okay. First of all, yes, portals exist. There's two different kinds. I mean, well, there's several kinds, but for the topic of what you're talking about, they have some that are called anchored. The ones that are anchored don't move. They're there all the time. Okay. They are not. Yeah, it's just like we have expressways. I guess that's the easiest way to put it for people. We have
some place they go to a lot anyway.
Yeah, and you've got different beings that are using them. They're not just Sasquatch that are using them.
Okay.
You also have, and I don't know what the proper term is, I call them portable. They literally can create them using their own energy and vibration, and they can open them up wherever they're at. So.
Okay.
They can do that at will. I've physically seen them. Yes, all of them have paranormal abilities. It comes down to the clan that they're in on whether or not they use them and access them. The only way they know they have these paranormal abilities is if the parents teach them. And if in our people, it would be attuned to like an Amish culture, where you have sectors of the Amish that use the electricity and the cars and that kind of thing, and then you have other sectors that that's strictly forbidden. So if you are in a if there's a clan and they choose to use all the paranormal abilities, they will teach their children, so the children know they have them. If they don't teach it to the kids don't know it. Any more than I believe that everybody can mind speak, they just aren't aware that they can because we've never been taught to.
Right.
You know, I mean, some of us have, but not all of us. So if you have a clan that uses, they're all telepathic, every single solitary one of them. They all can cloak. They can all do everything. It's just a matter of that clan allows it, so they were taught that they could. In the case of the portals, they can have their own portals where they open them and they, you know, like let's say one wants to open one right where it's at, it can go in and close it and be gone, and that's theirs. But they also have permanent ones. We have one across the driveway from my house in the woods. That's a permanent one. We have seen things coming and going out of there, glowing objects, faces, whatever. You know, I have a permanent one that's under one of the bushes in the back that my cat's gone into before, and he's no longer allowed outside because of it.
Wow.
So you have these, and you can also do what they call a rift. A rift is basically, it's almost like a tear, okay? You're going to open this little tiny spot. It's not a regular portal. It's almost like a tear, and, you know, that can be used as a transportation thing as well. Lots of people, myself included, know how to open and close portals. That doesn't mean you just, because you can, you do. Because the ones that need to stay open are open for a reason. And if you close it off, it's like if you have a major expressway going through your town that tens and 20,000 people are using every day, and somebody goes and shuts that expressway down, you've got a big problem.
Yeah.
You've got, you know. So and it, the easiest way I can explain it is just like we use our expressways. But, yes, they have some that they can open on their own. I've seen them wave their hand and have the ground open up. I had one right up the road from me. The road goes through this rock wall. And as you go through the rock wall, I had one come down the path from the woods, run across in front of my car, open a portal in the roll, in the rock wall, and then it closed right behind him.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, that's interesting, Robin. And I tell you what, Phil, I'd like to have you back within a couple of weeks because you've been a lot of fun. You've had great stories that I think are, in my opinion, are meaningful, and I think they've been fun to listen to.
Thank you.
Well, he's got some other things that, you know, I would like to see him talk about on here because he's had a lot of things going on lately that I think that people would want to hear about because I think that they happen to them as well, and they don't quite know where to go or how to express what they're seeing, which will help them process it.
Right, and so, and Phil, I got your number written down. I'll give you a call, you know, after the show, and we'll discuss a date that you might could come back because I'd love to have you. I think it's been a lot of fun. Now,
okay.
What I want to do is I want to change the topic. You know, Robin and I were talking today, and Robin, she might have had, you know, we all have a little bit of a rough time occasionally. And I said, Robin, do you know how I describe you? Now, Robin, can I review this because I think everybody will find everyone will find it interesting. I said I know Robin; she's one of my very best friends. In fact, all my scary caster buddies are my best friends. I mean, that's why they're on the show that I care about the most in the world. And Robin irritates me, and like my typical friend will say, well, why does one of your very best friends irritate you? I said, well, here's why. Because she's a grandmother from Michigan. And there are times when she is so deadly accurate with her predictions and everything that it just kind of makes me mad. And it worries me a little bit when she says, John, you need to be careful with this, and this. And it's like, oh, God, I didn't want to hear that, Robin. And then, and I think I was even mentioning it to Kyler, and I said, Kyler, do you know the Blue Ribbon story? He said, no, John, you know, I've only been on the show about 2 months, 3 months. So, Devin, you there? You still with us?
I am.
I hope you are. Good. Devin, would you mind explaining the background of the Blue Ribbon story, and then Robin, would you tell the consequent of how that of how it panned out? Would y'all mind doing that? Because I think it is one of the most charming stories of ability. We got 6 minutes left, and I just wanted everybody to hear it again. We've got a lot of new listeners, and I just think it's so. If we got 5 minutes, I want to repeat this story because I want everyone to hear it. So Devin, can you give us the background in 2 or 3 minutes?
Sure. Well, one of my very best friends passed away last February, so it'd be February 2021. And she was the type of person that was very interested in all things paranormal and occult. And so I knew that, you know, if anybody passed away and then was able to somehow get back in touch with me, I knew it would be her. And so after she passed, I kind of enlisted Robin's help because I know Robin's really good at that sort of thing as a kind of as a medium, right, Robin, I guess you'd say?
Yeah.
And so Robin helped, and we kind of were able to talk to Amy, and Amy left me with one specific message about a blue ribbon that she showed Robin. And I didn't know what that meant, like right away, immediately in the time when we were talking on the podcast. But then I think maybe that night or the next morning, I went and opened my closet, and there was one of her shirts that I had taken, and it was a Pabst Blue Ribbon shirt that had, you know, probably about 40 blue ribbons printed all over it. So I was just so shocked when I opened my closet door, and I was like, oh, well, hello, there you are.
Yeah, it was crazy because she was so insistent, and she's like, he has to know, he has to keep the blue ribbon. That blue ribbon means everything to me, and I'm like, what blue ribbon? Like, did you win a prize, or, you know, what's going on? And she kept showing me this blue ribbon, and, I don't drink, not that I'm opposed to anybody else, I just don't like the taste. So it never occurred to me that this ribbon was like a Pabst blue ribbon. But it looked like that, and I'm thinking, I don't know what kind of blue ribbon this is, but it's a blue ribbon. And she was just excessively adamant that he knows to find the blue ribbon, that the blue ribbon needed to stay with him, that it meant the world to her, and it was something that she treasured. I mean, she just went really on and on about it. So I said something to Devin, and I said, this is going to sound really crazy, and I'm sorry, but all I can do is tell you what she says. And he said, well, I don't really know of any ribbons that she had. And I said, I don't know. All I know is you're supposed to look for the blue ribbon. And it was only a few days later, I think, when you or John got hold of me and said, you aren't going to believe this. We found the blue ribbon.
And you know, that, you know, Kyler, I had that story repeated because of you, because that shows the kind of ability that Robin has. And I know that Trey Donaway, when I talk to him about Robin, he's fairly adamant that Robin has a lot of answers that a lot of people don't. And Dr. Trey, would you say that's an appropriate way to put it?
Oh, yeah. You know, Robin is not a nut. I have met Robin in person. She is not a nut. She just had experiences most people have never had, and everybody's welcome to their own opinion. You can choose to believe or not, but she's pretty darn convincing.
Robin is giving me details of stories that I haven't given to her, and that's how I know, okay, this is the real deal, because she has told me parts of my own story that I didn't share with anybody else, including her.
Right. Robin did that with me. So anyway, I tell you what, the British lady is telling me we're about done with the show. This has been the most fun.
Thank you,
and
guys.
I will get up with you right after the show, Phil, and we'll reschedule you for another time, because this has been great. The conversation is
good.
He's got some good stuff. He really does.
And
I think
it'll
be beneficial for people.
And all co-hosts are required to come back when you're on with another joke as bad as mine.
Oh, Lord, someone help us.
My flowers, and as bad as Trey's and as bad as Devin's, because they're great. What was a great way to start this. So anyway, I wanted to thank everybody. It was wonderful. Be sure to check out ScaryCast on Facebook. You can get John LeMay's new magazine, Strange West. It's got a story that I wrote about Ambrose Bierce. I'll probably tell that next week.
Awesome.
I think it'd be a good thing to do. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, 9 p.m. Eastern time on the one, the only, and the coolest show on the Internet, ScaryCast. Thanks, everybody, and we'll
take
see
care,
you
everybody.
Next week.
Bye.
Everybody stay good.
Good night,
bye.
Guys. Bye.
Take care, people.
Au revoir. That was good. Hello?